I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. Happy another double game week in Major League Soccer and for the Colorado Rapids, and happy week of the third leg of the 2024 version of the Rocky Mountain Cup. A lot has happened in the soccer world and in the American political world since last we podcasted, and I feel it would be inappropriate to do a super peppy podcast intro that's well written out and has a bunch of deep cuts because the world's got its issues. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you today?
I'm okay. It was a weird weekend, right? We had all the craziness of Saturday, and then I learned of the information of the shooting in Butler County, which is the county north of Pittsburgh, at a Pittsburgh Riverhounds game, and that was really odd. We also had a moment of silence at the Riverhounds game, which was pretty odd. And then Sunday was just crazy because I caught half of the Euro match, and then I was kind of rooting for England, so I was disappointed. And then I spent the evening getting ready for the big Copa game, which I was really going to like buckle in and get really excited for. And it was delayed for an hour and a half because of total chaos and mischief. And
Hillsborough poophousery.
Yeah, and then Shakira performed, and honestly, I started to fall asleep during her performance because after the first song, I didn't know any of it, and then I like basically fell asleep at the 70th minute, and nothing had happened yet. So it was kind of a lost weekend on a lot of levels. It was like, you know, and it was a lost weekend, you know, there for Republicans and for Democrats and for America and for civility and for soccer fans and for MLS fans. I mean, it was just a lost weekend all around, you know.
So. It was a good Sunday for Spain between Alcaraz sweeping Djokovic in straight sets at Wimbledon, and then obviously Spain winning over England. But yeah, to your point, Mark, I remember I texted you. Let me pull up the text thread because I think it's instructive into our relationship and how we interacted with each other, and also maybe I think spoke to the tone of the day and everything. So I did mount Blue Sky on Saturday before the home game, listeners, and so I had hiked that hike before when it was Mount Evans. I felt it appropriate to update my cardboard sign if you didn't see that post I had on Twitter. But so in any case, I do a 14er, you know, I wake up at 6 a.m. and, you know, I'm summoning Mark at 11:15, and I've beaten whatever storms are coming over from the westerlies and everything, and I get to the stadium. So I find out while setting up to post about the lineup dropping that, you know, what happened in Butler County happened. And so I text you, 14er, then Trump assassination attempt, game hasn't started yet and I'm already excited, to which you replied, I should point out, in all lowercase, lol, which I assume was a very faint toned one. But yeah, Mark, the game didn't even start, hadn't even started, and I was already exhausted. And I think on Saturday, between the 14er, exhaustion, caffeine, protein after the 14er, and then needing to hydrate in order to actually breathe and say things in post game, I easily had 150 ounces of fluids on Saturday. And Sunday was just lazing around on the couch with the AC on, drinking water and watching sports and just being brain dead. Listeners, I had one of you reached out to me recently and commented that we were a very good positive unifying force, or that we did a good job. We were a respite, a break from all of the chaos of the world in which we got to turn off our brains, think about this club, think about this game that we love so much. Mark and I have our political views on things in the world. He and I are generally aligned in the same direction. But, you know, I would just say I we're not going to go into a full political tirade here about what happened or what we think about it. I just, if you're scared about America's future, or if you're sickened by what happened, or if you look at this and you think all this is just going to lead to greater division because of the way that both political parties or everyone is going to spin this, and everything is just a political football for somebody to try and gain an inch in anticipation for, you know, that Tuesday in November and everything. Like, if you're uncertain about our future, if you're scared, if you're exhausted from all of this, if you don't know what's going to happen, like, your feelings are valid and it's okay to feel that way. Vote legally. Get as informed as you can without being sucked into the toxicity of the, you know, of the media echo chambers and everything, and what has become our American political dialogue between these two parties and these two, for me, very unpopular and unqualified candidates. So make an informed decision, vote legally, get other people in your life to also vote legally and make an informed decision. And in theory, the democratic process will bear out a candidate that is at least the what the people want ultimately, or what the people least don't want as well. But so I want to acknowledge that emotions, and then Mark, you can talk about it, and then we will quickly pivot because you don't come to us for politics. You come to us from a break from many things in your lives, and we want to be that given the significance of this week for the Colorado Rapids.
I just want to kind of restate something I said in synagogue. You know, when I led services, I lead services like 6 times a week because that's my job. Which is that, you know, we don't solve things through violence. We don't, we create an America where democracy dies if we think that political violence or any kind of violence is an acceptable solution to problems. You know, you don't have to like everybody, and you can even think bad thoughts about them. Lord knows I do. One of the jokes that I tell in my Wednesday class, I study this very heavy. It's if for those of you who bought my book, thank you. For those of you who haven't, buy my book. I wrote a book about a specific kind of 18th and 19th century Eastern European spiritual wisdom literature. And one of the things I say to people all the time about the book and the literature that I study all the time every week is that the rabbis, the spiritual leaders who are influencing me, are telling me to be a better person. They're reminding me to be humble, to be kind, to be patient, to quell my anger, to dial things back. And what I tell people all the time is, you might think of me as like a holy sainted, you know, rabbi, was so wise and so kind and so thoughtful. I'm not. I'm a terrible person. I am I'm a terrible person, right? And the only thing that keeps the only thing that keeps me from being a terrible person in reality is studying this literature that reminds me constantly, be humble, be kind, be patient, you know, quell your anger. Relax. And I think we as a country and we as individuals forget that a lot. We forget that, like, you have these feelings of like frustration or anger or outrage or depression or whatever, but you gotta like check in with something else that's going to push back against that and will allow you to see a different side. I think, by the way, I would guess 99.9% of our podcast listeners, this is not a major problem for them. None of them have purchased automatic weapons and were climbing bell towers at college universities attempting to change the political system in America. Like, that's just not, hopefully that's not our listener base. And if it is, well, welcome to, no, just kidding. Okay, so, all right. But anyhow, that's, I hope that we can, through podcasting, through soccer, and just through me and you just being level-headed, chill homies, impart to everybody that, like, let's dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, be peaceful. Political violence, any violence is not the answer for us. Hopefully we're being a good representation for positive masculinity, for healthy masculinity, for those of you who are looking for it. And if nothing else, you know, that's this is your daily dose of hope core.
Nothing is more masculine than podcasting in your basement about sports.
With that, listeners, this past Saturday, the Colorado Rapids played against the New York Red Bulls in the first game for Omer Fernandez against his former club since joining the Rapids as a free agent. And I believe just the second time ever that Chris Armas has, since being a member of the Red Bulls coaching staff, coached against New York Red Bulls. I believe he coached against them when he was with Toronto FC for half season, and now obviously he's here with Rapids. And Mark, it was a 1-1 draw. I don't know that it's super useful talking about the tactics or what happened or anything. I do think that New York came out in a change of formation and did a good job of marrying when to be compact and when to be defensive or a little bit more pragmatic, and when to be that more Red Bullsy pressing style and everything in their 3-4-2-1. At times it looked like a 3-4-3. At times it looked like a 4-3-3. To me, it was kind of all over the place. But all of the nuance or detail or constructive criticism or picking a part of this performance for me has to be said with a huge grain of salt, or I should say a massive clump of electrolyte powder, in that kickoff temperature was in the 90s. I cannot recall, listeners, I have been to 90-95% of home games this club has had since 2016. I cannot recall an evening kickoff for the Colorado Rapids in which a hydration break was in effect. The only hydration breaks that I remember at Dick's Sporting Goods Park happened in games that were afternoon kickoffs, you know, like a 2 p.m. or a 3 p.m., maybe a 5 p.m. as well. But like, I do not remember a game that started at 7 or 7:30 in which there was a hydration break in both halves. And I think it showed that both teams were a little bit lagging. I think certainly the dry heat was something that was different for the Red Bulls to deal with, but they came maybe a little bit more prepared for some of those, you know, as a team that's had to play, you know, in Miami at 7:30 in July. And so I think that clearly affected the Rapids. Chris Armas acknowledged it. The players acknowledged it as well. They didn't really have they didn't have their usual energy to start the half. They didn't have their usual energy as the game went along. And I don't think that the Red Bulls dropped off in the ways that opponents, including opponents that are due north of where the Rapids are based, and so in theory have worse weather, colder temperatures overall, throughout the year, they didn't drop off, you know, after the 65th, 70th minute. We didn't see that necessarily from them. Mark, I will acknowledge the goals in the first minute of first half stoppage time. Lewis Morgan scored on a really great play in transition, and another sequence that I think is becoming a bit of an Achilles heel for the Rapids defense, where the opponent comes in transition and the rest defense is okay shape-wise, but doesn't necessarily have the numbers. And so the back four will drop back so far, given how the play progresses, and maybe collapse a little bit too much to then leave space at the top of the box, just inside the box, and a trailing midfielder and Ollie LaRoz, sometimes a Kolbasic, Connor Ronan on this play, if you ask me, is not able to catch up to the attacker that is making a late run or changes the angle of their run to then have an open opportunity for that. We saw that on the goal that Oliver LaRoz gave up to Klein the third against St. Louis City FC. A week ago Sunday, and then I think we saw it again on this play as well. Game kind of goes back and forth. I thought it got stretched but slowed down in the second half, and ultimately it was an own goal from captain Sean Nealis, who I believe Chris Armas drafted, in the 64th minute after a really good attacking sequence that saw Omer Fernandez hit the post, and the ball got recycled, and then it was Keegan Rosenberry who put the ball into the mixer, into the danger zone, Mark, and Sean Nealis trying to make a play to prevent it from getting to a Rafael Navajo or an Omer Fernandez, accidentally put it in his own net. I thought it was a fair result overall. Mark, anything that you have to say about this game, or are we giving everybody a mulligan because Mother Nature decided everybody's going to be sweaty and tired?
I have several thoughts. Number one, RBNY's away jersey sucks. It's weird. I think I liked it at the beginning of the season. I'd have to go back and
look. I could not read the numbers.
So that's always a problem. I was at the Riverhounds game on Saturday, and we had the exact same problem with the team that we were playing, who I cannot remember who it was at this moment. But like, yeah, this is a thing where if the numbers don't stand out, you're blowing it. So that's thing one. Thing two, I think you had some interesting thoughts about formation change. I noticed, especially in the first half, that both teams were really playing their brand of soccer, which was they were more interested in creating through defensive pressure. And so there was a lot of immediate pressure to the ball at the midfield or on the back line. And then the immediate response of both teams was, well, we'll just play it long. So there were a lot of like 30-yard ground passes and 60-yard air passes in the first half, and it kind of like ended at nothing. And so there was, it didn't end up in ping pong, but it was like the defense was leading the offense in terms of things. So that was interesting. I didn't mind it. I think it was an interesting way to go. Overall, there was a lot of good goalkeeping in this game. Both goalkeepers were forced into making saves. Zach Steffen had one early at like 7 minutes that was, he kind of like bopped it and spilled it and then bopped it again and then kicked it clear. And then in the 10th minute, he had a nice big save. He had a big save at the 87th. Coronel had a big save at 71. I was saying it and you were bringing it up. But that was, and you could see on Cole's face afterwards. I mean, one of the challenges, my new piece, the interview that I did with Cole Bassett, part one of the interview is up. Those of you who are subscribing Highlanders should grab it and take a look at it. I've also posted it to our Facebook and our Twitter and our Reddit. So go check that out. But it's really interesting. Now, what that means is that I'm going to be focusing unduly so on Cole Bassett for the next couple weeks, because I'm fascinated to see like how he's doing and what's going on with him. But he had a really nice finish. He said something really interesting in our interview that I'll just mention, which was like, he basically said like, oh yeah, I really am pushing myself now to score a couple goals, to score two or three goals in a game. And I just laughed and I was like, remember last year when the team was struggling to score one and now you're getting greedy and you want to score two and three at a time? And then I also kind of asked him, like, is this the Georgi Mihailovic effect where Georgi's been banging in a bunch of goals the last couple weeks? The last thing I'll say is this, speaking of Georgi Mihailovic, did we miss Georgi Mihailovic? You know, Omer Fernandez had a couple of chances that weren't well taken that he missed on, wasn't super great. I wonder whether if Mihailovic had been in instead of Omer, that would have been an upgrade, or it would have like changed the dynamic. I think it would have. I'm a huge Omer Fernandez fan. I really like the kid. He reminds me a ton of El Bikengo.
Enzo Martinez?
Enzo Martinez, in terms of his possession. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. In terms of his possession, his kind of lateral movement ability. So Omer Fernandez changes speeds well. He moves forward. He bursts forward quickly, but he also bursts sideways well. And he keeps the ball at his feet really well. The other things in his game all need development. And those are things that, like, having watched a lot of soccer players, that's a thing that can develop over time. The other thing I'll say is this. I have been over and over again this season slowly really impressed with Kevin Cabral, finding that he is slowly, slowly starting to make a bigger and bigger impact. You know, two games ago, he had an assist and a goal that he combined both with Cole Bassett in the game against St. Louis. He's a real game changer in terms of stretching the field with length and speed. He did it again in this game. Didn't come to anything, but he was really an important factor in this. Matt, I had one question for you, and I was thinking it as I was watching. Is there a player that you think we don't notice enough or we don't talk about enough on this podcast? Like, I think, like, the players that I just mentioned and the players that you just mentioned, they're often players that we often mention. Are there guys on the team? Like, I was thinking, like, Andreas Maxo had a clearance at some point. And I was like, I don't think I've mentioned Andreas Maxo in, like, 2 months. Is that because he's doing his job or that he's not doing his job? Are there other players on the team where we're not calling them out because they just put in a shift and it's good to go? Or that we should call out?
I think there are players who you not noticing them or them just doing their job, them adding value to the team, is not noteworthy, and that's the compliment of them. You know, it was like the the start that Mike Edwards had a couple of games. Like, you know, he had a couple moments where, like, he had a really big clearance or he had a hard tackle that was done well, and he gets up, he's jacked up, you know, he throws his hands up to try and get the crowd involved. And he did that, like, maybe three or four times in the 90 minutes, but for the most part, we didn't necessarily notice him. You were following the game. If you were following where the ball was and where it was happening, it wasn't necessarily around him. And the fact that you didn't notice him was an indication that he wasn't out of place from a defensive standpoint. I think we tend to notice defenders when they make a really big play, usually when something else bad has happened, or when they make a mistake that leads to a goal that then we are critiquing. I think attacking wise, we notice players when they miss a really big chance or they make a really big chance. This is a team that's scoring a lot of goals. This is a team that is sharing the wealth in terms of who's creating and converting on those big chances. So even if, you know, if Omer Fernandez had done nothing through 89 minutes, but, you know, that one shot that he had off the post goes in and that's him scoring against his former team, getting a 1-1 draw, we'd be talking a bunch about Omer Fernandez from that one moment. So the question then is, Mark, is who has kind of established their baseline of we have an expectation for them. They mostly just meet that expectation. And unless they do something spectacular because somebody else messes up or they themselves mess up, we don't particularly talk about them. I think Andreas Maxeaux is on that list. I would say Captain Keegan Rosenberry is on that list. He's not a rah-rah, get-in-your-face captain like a Jack Price or like a Tim Howard, who's now a member of the Houston Dynamo ownership group. Mark, we need to point out that Houston Dynamo ownership now has fantastic beard game between James Harden and Tim Howard. And so I think we need Marcelo Balboa, I think, around Dick's Sporting Goods Park a little bit more. This is just me, listeners, honestly acknowledging that I miss Pablo's mustache. I don't miss Pablo Mastroianni. I miss Pablo's mustache. But so I think Connor Ronan is on that list certainly as well, Mark. So Connor Ronan, Andreas Maxeaux, maybe Keegan Rosenberry, I think are all three guys that if they just do their job, they're not noticeable enough because they're not flashy, and them doing their job prevents something that we would then, you know, put our put a stronger focus towards as well.
I loved interviewing Keegan Rosenberry either last year or the year before, exactly for that reason, which is like the guy who flies under the radar is the guy that you want to talk to because you want to ask him, how come you fly under the radar? The other thing about Keegan is he's a great interview. He's really, really he has a kind of kindness around him, mm-hmm. which for a guy who his full-time job is to kick other dudes in the shins is, you know, very refreshing. But that's one of those classic sports players who you say, like, on and off the field, he's a different guy. You know, he's just a very, very, yeah, perfect.
You mentioned the Bassett header, Mark, so I don't need to talk about that a little bit more. We talked about the energy.
It was awesome. It was awesome. I talked about it last week on the pod, but I got to re-listen to it, and it's really interesting. You know this, Matt. It's really interesting to re-listen to an interview and think to yourself, like, this was really enjoyable, and we really, like, talked about a lot of really interesting things, and it kind of went in an interesting direction. So, anyway.
Yeah, no, I've been impressed with how Cole has comported himself so far this year, certainly.
He's great. He did do a thing at the beginning, which you and I have both done or heard, which is, he spoke in shorthand. He mentioned at some point that he was really stoked about the win over RSL. And then he mentioned the last time, this other game that they won at RSL, and it wasn't like that. And then he kind of mentioned winning 5-0. And I went, we won 5-0 this year? I don't think we won 5-0, but I'm not going to correct him. And I realized that he had just very quickly mentioned the win from 2020, but he had mentioned the score line, but he had not really clarified what year that was the score. And then he also he mentioned that he was young, but that he was getting older and he wasn't as young as Yamil. And then he just moved on. And he said it so fast, I didn't catch it. And only upon re-listening to it did I realize that he meant Lamine Yamil,
the Spaniard. The Barcelona kid.
For Barcelona, right. And it was like, by the way, my interviews with Porik used to be like that too. And also with the director of development,
Brian
Crookham. Yeah. Where they would just like throw out a name or like a one word name or like a one word team. And I would just be like, I don't know what they're talking about, but I will just nod and smile and pretend like I know what's going on.
Yes. So let's talk about a few other things, Mark. Rabbi, I think it's worthy to bring
up. That's like, shut up about your interview, Mark.
Rafael Navajo has not scored in four games, Mark, and those are also the four games that have come since he officially, the transfer became permanent, and he became a permanent Rapids player. I'm not panicked about that. I guess I'm curious about it. I'm not concerned about it. He's done some good work in these four games. Okay, he didn't score at LAFC. The team lost 3-0. Nobody scored in that game, and while he did not get on the score sheet for the absolute thumping of St. Louis City, he did a lot of good work to then create space for other people to do that. And he did some good stuff in possession and in the defensive pressing game in this against New York Red Bulls as well. But that's something that I'm kind of curious about. You know, he's had some stiffs and everything. We've seen what good he's been. You know, I think it's also worth pointing out, Mark, that these four games in which he hasn't scored, one of those was against LAFC. One of those was him doing good stuff to help everybody else score goals. And the other two are games that have been without Georgi Mihailovic. And so while you and I both think that Cole Bassett is a very serviceable number 10, while Georgi's going to be away with the Olympic squad in Paris, I don't know that we've seen the same link up play either in Cole setting up Hafa or in Hafa doing his usual work to occupy the center backs to make life easier for the number 10 behind him, and Cole doing the same thing, or Cole doing as much with that opportunity that normally Georgi would have. So to your point, Mark, about how you like Omer Fernandez, but I do think this was not as good a performance from Cole Bassett, and particularly in a game where the offense isn't really clicking, you're trying to come from behind in the second half as well. It's really hot. It's kind of ugly. You know, you're going to have to thug it out on some level. That's a game where where we've come to expect Georgi Mihailovic to just grab the game by the scruff of the neck of just get into the final third, get it to me, and run to get open. And we're going to try and create something possession-wise, getting a set piece, something or other. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be the war daddy of the attack as well. And we didn't see that from Cole. It's just one game. It was super hot. It was Red Bulls. It was an ugly, like, this game was like watching a car crash. This is the car crash. You know, this was a Fast and Furious blooper reel equivalent of a soccer game, Mark. So I'm hesitant to criticize that fully. I do also want to say that some of the injuries certainly did affect maybe what the second half planning was substitution wise for the Rapids. For those of you who did not see, Calvin Harris is out for tomorrow against LA Galaxy. He was nursing a bit of a groin injury going into the game on Saturday, and then he re-aggravated it during warm-up, so he was listed as on the bench, but Mark, he was unavailable. And given that you have to submit your roster, game day roster, before, so if somebody gets hurt in pregame, you can't just swap out a guy who wasn't in the game day roster for a guy who gets hurt in the game. You can make a substitution for a starter that does not burn one of your subs, that does leave you one man short on the bench. So not having Calvin Harris in this game, I think, hurt a little bit, Mark, compounded by the fact that Omer Fernandez, who is not listed on the injury report for tomorrow, had to be subbed out with an injury after a hard tackle from one of his former New York Red Bulls teammates. And so that kind of hamstrings you a little bit as well, Mark, because, you know, you've got Kamani Stewart-Baines, who had just played for Rapids too. So, okay, throw him on and kind of have him be an energy guy. And you could throw on Jonathan Lewis, but then, you know, that kind of limits your sub options. And then it's the first game of a 3-game week. It's been super hot. You want to be ready for RSL. So you don't want to burn Hafa for 90 minutes in this game that you're already kind of in control of and at least getting a draw. So then you put on Darren Yapi. That limits so many of your other substitutions. And so I am starting to wonder, I'm curious about this. I don't think this. So this is a hypothesis, not a theory, listeners. That, you know, maybe some of the young guys who are on the bench for the Rapids right now that have good cover positionally are guys that Armas is willing to put out there, but you don't necessarily want to make five of those substitutions to then have a bunch of kids, a Kamani Stewart-Baines, a Wayne Frederick, a Sebastian Anderson, all on the field simultaneously. You can make one of those subs to have, you know, Sebastian Anderson be in a position to be successful and also have people around him to make him comfortable. You don't want to put a bunch of kids to where then they're all going to try and do something. They're all going to be a little bit nervous, a little bit inexperienced. They're all going to make one little mistake and nobody can necessarily cover for everybody else. And so I think that has colored the substitution pattern and planning from Chris Armas a little bit, and maybe that's the reason why we only saw three substitutions with two sub windows on Saturday. I can understand the logic behind it, Mark. That being said, I do think we've seen a bit of an indication from Chris Armas, even with rotating the squad from a starting standpoint and from a second half substitution standpoint. He's very much a try to win the game in front of you kind of guy. That's something I respect. I don't personally, I think you have to see the macro and everything. I realize we're having this conversation, you know, what, 24 hours away from the lineup being announced for LA Galaxy. So we're only seeing, you know, one part of the plan for a management of a three game and 8 day period. But that's something that, you know, I thought was a little bit noteworthy. Two things that I'll say, Mark, again, just the heat was really difficult, but I did ask Chris Armas post game about the emotional significance of the game for him. And I thought he had a really, I'm going to look up this quote actually, because I tweeted it out. So this is from Chris Armas post game, asked about what it was like going up against his former team and whether or not, therefore, it had any more juice or any more significance for him. Quote, earlier in my life, I might have thought that way. I can tell you with 100% honesty, I knew I'd see a few friendly faces. That was really it. It's not revenge. When I was a player for LA Galaxy and I got traded to Chicago Fire, all I wanted to do was beat the LA Galaxy. I didn't feel that way tonight. My mind was focused on the result, end quote. And so, Mark, I think that highlights a trend, you know, similar to what we were saying earlier about not being vengeful or violent or just, you know, treating your emotions with respect, but also doing it in a way that doesn't cause suffering for other people. I wonder, maybe I'm imagining something here romantically. Maybe this is actually the soccer gods trying to tell us something. William Yarbrough comes in with San Jose Earthquakes and does not have revenge. Revenge was a dish best not served for him, and he gets a result against the Colorado Rapids. Diego Rubio comes in, energy charge, probably having some feelings towards the club. He doesn't get a result. And Omer Fernandez and Chris Armas now have gone to NYCFC. They've gone back home for Chris, you know, closer to Long Island, for Omer against the team that he would have, you know, played against or would have been a supporter of had he been a few years older, and they've gotten a win against NYCFC and a hard fought, kind of disappointing. Disappointing in that they didn't win a home game. I think when you come from behind, it feels like a point gained result as well. And so maybe there are ways for you to get what you want without necessarily being vengeful. And I think Chris Armas continues to feel his feelings and I think have a very measured, mature, and just respectful and healthy, almost Ted Lasso like energy towards things in the universe that is philosophical and that I find humanizing and respectful and that I appreciate and makes him an interesting and more compelling person to cover as well. And so I think that's healthy for him, Mark. And if that's something that then he's going to carry forward to, I think we're going to see somebody who has just a measured, mature approach and his emotions are not going to get in a way that are going to negatively impact this football club. I feel better about him as a head coach, knowing and believing that. Listeners, let's talk, because tomorrow at time recording, today if you're listening to us on Wednesday, so Wednesday, July 17th, 2024, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the LA Galaxy, Kevin Cabral's former team, and this is the first game that the Rapids will be playing this season against the G's. So Mark, here, let me open up the standings to see where LA Galaxy are. They are in third in the Western Conference. They have 43 points off of 24 games played. They have a record of 12-5-7. Greg Vanney's side has a goal difference of plus 12 this season. And at the Diggity in Carson, California, they are 7-1-3 this season. I should point out, listeners, it was a really good weekend for the Rapids in that they got a draw because all of the other teams ahead of them lost and had something horrible go wrong. LAFC got absolutely spanked. Did you stay up to watch this game, Mark? The Columbus just absolutely throttling them? LAFC 5-1, like three red cards. Okay, you should go back and rewatch this, Mark.
Nice.
Like, you know, we'll see what happens with Messi's ankle, given what happened in the Copa America final. I still think FC Cincinnati is a force to be reckoned with. If you told me right now Columbus Crew's winning the Supporters Shield, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. RSL went to Portland Timbers, got played off the pitch. They lost that game as well. We'll talk about a player that they're missing a little bit later as well, Mark. And then LA Galaxy, kind of similar to the Rapids, goes to Dallas and plays poorly and drops points because weird things happen in Frisco, Texas. So as disappointed as we may be, Rapids fans, about the way that the Rapids performed or the fact that they only got a draw or that it was just kind of a mad performance, functionally, they gained ground on the three teams that are ahead of them as they sit in fourth, and they're just 5 points off of all three of these teams who are tied on 43 points. In any case, the Rapids, one spot back from the Galaxy, fourth in the Western Conference, 38 points off of 24 games played. A record of 11-8-5, a goal difference of plus 7, and away from home this year, they are 4, 6-2. Mark, let's run through the LA Galaxy's lineup. Ricky Puig, their star central midfielder, Barcelona Academy product, has been playing in the number 10 role more recently. He was in a more reserved, like, regista kind of role earlier in the season, and then he got hurt in June, and he's come back since then. Marky Delgado and Cerrillo are holding it down in the double pivot that I would say on paper Connor Ronan and Oliver Larraz can match. It is all about the wingers and the goal scorers for LA Galaxy right now. Josef Paintsil is a very dangerous player coming over from Greece, I believe. And then Gabriel Peck, record signing in terms of transfer fee for the LA Galaxy on that right wing in Greg Vanney's 4-2-3-1 at times 4-3-3-ish role. So Gabriel Peck and Yamane, the Asian outside fullback, going up against Kevin Cabral and Sam Vines, I think could be a critical matchup in terms of determining the tide of this game. And longtime MLS journeyman, former New England Revolution and Austin FC midfielder Diego Fagundes has been there as well. He's been a central midfielder. He's been a defensive midfielder. He played out on the left, according to MLSsoccer.com, over the weekend against Dallas. And then Maya Yoshida is their main center back coming over. I can't remember between him and Yamane. I think one's Japanese and one's Korean, and I can never remember which is both are Japanese. Thank you, Mark. Arigato. And then Jalen Neal, Mark, is the kind of equivalent of Moise Bombito, or maybe their Courtney Ford, in terms of being a homegrown center back. He's been getting some more minutes with the team. I think he had a call up for either January camp or maybe the U20s as well. Jalen Neal, not a part of the Olympic squad, to be clear. The Galaxy defense has been a bit of an issue. They don't handle transition defense well when their rest defense isn't set up to deal with that, and they're not particularly good on defensive set pieces. Mark, I'm excited about this game, and John McCarthy is in goal. I should point out, LA Galaxy do have some injuries to deal with that are problematic for them. Alde, the Brazilian outside back, he's been hurt for a while. Brugman, who's been widely regarded as their second best midfielder outside of Ricky Puig, is hurt as well. And Dejan Jovalik has been out as well. That's forced Paintsil to be kind of a false nine role, and that's something that hasn't necessarily suited him. So it's Ricky Puig trying to be the straw that stirs the drink in the middle of the park for LA Galaxy, and then it is very much Gabriel Peck who is going to try and score on that right side. Mark, you got to see LA Galaxy in person. What did you see? What did you like? What did you not like? What about this team is exposable when Lalo Zubar goes in to absolutely poop house the Galaxy at the Diggity tomorrow night?
You know, when you are on it, Matt, it's really hard to be your podcast partner because there's so few things to say that you haven't already picked out. I think you nailed almost every high point. The only thing I think I would like emphasize is I don't think you spent a lot of time on Josef Paintsil, and he is really an electric player. You spent a lot of time talking about everybody, but you nailed every point about the Galaxy. I think your talk about their transition defense is a weakness of them. I wouldn't say it exactly that way. I don't think you're wrong in that respect. My take on the Galaxy is that they are so aggressive and so transition focused and so offensively focused that they can get kind of thrown for a loop when you counterattack effectively well. Having spoken with Chris Armas and Cole Bassett and some of the other Rapids folks, that is a highlight of the Rapids style this season, which is play that ball forward the first time you get it, aggressively move forward. So this could be a really upbeat, exciting soccer match. This could be a lot of fun. This could be a 4-3 or a 3-2 kind of banger of a game because both teams want to play forward. They want to move the ball, and they both believe in kind of high pressure or playing what's called a high block or a mid block, which is you don't drop your defense too far back, so that the line of resistance and you're trying to create cut the pass off deep or keep a guy from running into you by having defense in numbers against him. You're having to defend. You're pressing him high in with one defender at a time, trying to create that turnover so that you can race up against a smaller number of defenders. So that creates a lot of excitement and a lot of potential here. I'm not as optimistic about the Rapids' chances against LA. It's really interesting to note their 2-0 loss against Dallas and to try and say, like, what's up with that? The LA Galaxy I saw at the Diggity about a month ago played an electric, exciting brand of football. Everybody on the pitch was dangerous. Diego Fagundes in particular looked vintage Diego Fagundes. He looked absolutely like the man has not aged a day. And I've been watching, you and I have been following this league for 10 years in earnest. I've been following this league in earnest for 10 years. I've seen Diego Fagundes from when he was young and kind of mumbly and stumbly with the Revs when he started in New England. And I've seen all the other iterations of him over his career. And he's kept his speed. He's gotten better at delivering the ball accurately. His dribbling is still very dangerous. He's an excellent player. And now he's got all these pieces around him that are really, really dangerous. So the one difference in for me was that I didn't get to see Ricky Pooj play because he was out with a light knock in the game that I saw. So I haven't seen them kind of at their full strength. So that's the interesting thing. The other thing which you noted in the earlier segment was basically to say, which of these two teams is going to rotate the squad knowing that they have another game on Saturday. And then the broader question that's kind of related, I don't think coaches think this way, but I don't think they shouldn't think this way, is are MLS teams going to rest a little bit in both games going into Leagues Cup with the hope of trying to get a trophy? I mean, the Rapids have made the mistake for their entire lifetimes of not putting the right guys on the field for the Open Cup and then getting bounced from the Open Cup. Matt is shaking his head no vociferously.
Mark,
I wouldn't do it that way.
Blood sacrifice Leagues Cup, and I will take a Joe Nasco special tomorrow against the LA Galaxy if it means the Rapids win on Saturday against for RSL Rocky Mountain Cup.
Will you explain the Joe Nasco special to those of us who have not been following the Colorado Rapids since 2013?
Joe Nasco was a backup goalkeeper.
2015? 2015.
I think it was 2014, Mark. I think it was close. I think it was the AJ De La Garza losing his son year, which would have been 2014. So Joe Nasco, backup goalkeeper for the Colorado Rapids, journeyman USL guy. I think he was 1 year unused sub with another MLS team, and I think he just had the 1 year with the Colorado Rapids, and they're playing against the LA Galaxy, and Joe Nasco has, I believe, still to this day, the quickest red card in MLS regular season play, like under 10 seconds right off the kickoff.
I think it's eight
seconds. Okay.
Yeah.
LA Galaxy are kicking off. They do the MLS kickoff. They get it to where it's Alan Gordon in the box, and he's 1v1 with Joe Nasco somehow. Nasco comes off his line, takes out Alan Gordon. This is the old FIFA rule, so double jeopardy. So penalty, dog so, denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, red card to the goalkeeper, and a penalty as well. And the Rapids lose. It could have been 4-0. It could have been 6-0. I don't remember what it was. And I think, Mark, that was like one of three appearances that Joe Nasco had for the Rapids of that year.
That was his last one. The two previous, I remember covering it and saying, like, I like him. He's pretty good. That was a year when the choices were him, John Berner, and I don't remember who the third one was. I don't remember.
Was Clint Irwin on the team at that point?
I think the reason we had problems was because Clint Irwin was either hurt or had been sold. One of the two. But anyways, all right. Let's keep this moving because ancient history introduced interests about four of our listeners right now.
Yes. So Joe Nasco played for the Panama City Pirates in the PDL, Mark, and then he was Atlanta Silverbacks, Rapids, back to the Silverbacks, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, and then he was, I believe this would have been the first year of existence, with Birmingham Legion. And so, yeah, he had four caps total with the Colorado Rapids, four total appearances, including the shortest appearance for a goalkeeper in Rapids history. So in any case, listeners, I would take, I guess, Zach Steffen getting red carded would be bad because Ethan Bandry is going to be on the bench because Adam Beaudry's with the youth national team, Mark. But in any case, Mark, I would take a non-important starter tomorrow getting a red card in 6 seconds and the Rapids absolutely getting blown out and the team punting on Leagues Cup just like they did last year if it means that the Rapids win on Saturday. I challenge members of the Rapids community who say that they would not do that deal. You make that deal, Rabbi?
I'd make that deal.
Damn good deal. Okay. Mark, so I agree with you. I think it's going to be an up-tempo game. I'm not sure that I trust either offense right now, just given that Dejan Jovalik is will be out for the LA Galaxy. And I do wonder, will the Galaxy defense, especially with Yoshida being fully healthy, given he was subbed out against FC Dallas previously, he had played every single game, all 90 minutes, that they'll be ready to deal with Rafael Navajo, and then maybe we'll see some changes. And I don't think the winger threat is going to be there if Omer Fernandez isn't able to start that game as well. So I think the intent will be there. I don't know if the quality will be there. Not having Georgi Mihailovic, not having Calvin Harris, maybe not having Omer Fernandez, I think might hurt or simplify the Rapids attack and then make it easier for the Galaxy, who have weaknesses that play to the Rapid strength, easier for them to play into. I think it's going to come down to what's going on from a wide standpoint because of where the Galaxy are just so strong in the middle. Delgado, Fagundes, Ricky Pooj, and then obviously the Rapids, their strength, you know, Oliver Larraz, Connor Ronan, Cole Bassett as well. So then it's going to come to a wide position. And Mark, this may just come down to, you know, whether or not the Rapids are taking that left flank, just like that half track in Saving Private Ryan with Kevin Cabral and Sam Vines versus Gabriel Peck and the Galaxy right back. Mark, you got a prediction for this game?
I think Colorado loses to the Galaxy 3-2 in this one. It does feel like a big goal scoring game for me.
Okay, I'm going to go to the other side, actually. I think we'll see a lot of open opportunities that are missed and maybe some good goalkeeping from McCarthy and from Zach Steffen. I think it'll be a 1-0 for the LA Galaxy, and it'll be Ricky Pooj creating something. I do think, I'll say with a caveat, that will come with the Galaxy not rotating the squad as much because this is their home game this week, whereas this is the away game for the Rapids. I think we'll see the Rapids rotate the squad given some of the injuries, given the importance of Saturday, and maybe emotionally and psychologically are already thinking about Saturday as well, and that'll lead to a 1-0 loss for the Rapids, a 1-0 victory for the Galaxy. Mark, shall we move on to the big one this week?
Sure. Let's talk about the Rocky Mountain Cup.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, July 20th, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on Real Salt Lake in the third and final leg of the 2024 Rocky Mountain Cup. Currently tied on points, the Rapids won the first leg in RSL and then lost that absolutely bonkers, possibly the greatest Rocky Mountain Cup game, at least that I've ever witnessed, by a score of 5-3. RSL, listeners, does have the tiebreakers. They have the superior goal difference. They won their game by 2 goals. The Rapids only won their game by 1 goal. And then there is a weird tiebreaker. I don't know why the group of 9, the group of 10 decided this, Mark. This was so dumb. Apparently, when there's a bunch of tiebreakers in the Rocky Mountain Cup, at one point, the tiebreaker becomes who won the cup the previous year. If you win your derby 1 year, and then you have 10 straight years of all nil-nil draws, you were not the better team for 11 years. You were the better team 1 year, and then you were even the rest of the way. So in any case, for those listeners who have any doubts about what needs to happen on Saturday, the only way that the Colorado Rapids win the Rocky Mountain Cup is with a straight win in 90 minutes. There's no tiebreaker. There's no goal difference. There's no away goals. There's no drawing in because they were the away team in 2 of the 3 games or whatever. The Rapids need to win. They need 3 points. And if they do that, they win the Rocky Mountain Cup outright for the first time since 2020. And they'll do so, Mark, for the first time at home since 2015 when Rabbi Mark Goodman, who was it?
No idea. What you always do this to me.
It was,
what's that?
Who scored for the Colorado Rapids? Former center back who Pablo Mastroeni absolutely loved, who was kind of mid, and he scored to win the Rocky Mountain Cup at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Bobby Burling?
Not Bobby Burling. Ponytail. From the middle of nowhere in North Carolina. Went to Wake Forest.
Mike. What was his name? No. Yeah, Mike. What? Oh, Mark Birch?
Not Mark Birch.
Ah, you're killing me. I have no
idea. Jared Watts. Jared Watts it is.
Jared Watts it is. Right.
Jared Watts it was.
Bobby Burling. To be fair, Mark Birch also had a ponytail, although it was really more of a top knot.
Yes. Okay. So, Mark, let's look at Real Salt Lake here. There's been a bit of squad rotation. I've seen that Justin Glad missed the last game for Real Salt Lake, and there's been a bit of a rotation at goalkeeper recently between Gavin Beavers and Zach McMath. I have to imagine, given Zach McMath's experience, familiarity with his rivalry, familiarity with Colorado, that he will be back in goal for this team. Adrian Brody is back at the right back position. I know that was a concern for them previously. I've really liked what I've seen, Mark, from Anelli in the two-man. There's a lot of really good double pivots this week in Major League Soccer, listeners, and Anelli and Ojeda for Real Salt Lake are one of them. And then Matt Crooks has been doing some really good work in midfield, Mark, as a Tammable designated player. And then, Rabbi, we have to talk about Diego Luna, who, similarly to Gol Bassett, was snubbed from the Olympic squad and came out and absolutely balled out. RSL would have played on the Saturday after 4th of July, and I think they won that game 5-3, 5-2, and he had 3 goals and an assist in that game. Gol Bassett then followed that up in the 4-1 win over St. Louis, in which he had a goal and assist from the number 10 position, playing for Georgi Mihailovic, who was with the Olympic team as well. So, Mark, I would not be shocked if does this turn straight up into ISO ball for both of these teams, of Diego Luna trying to win the trophy for Real Salt Lake and then give another message to Marko Mitrovic, and then Gol Bassett trying to do the same thing as well for the Colorado Rapids. This isn't even going to be a derby revenge thing, Mark. This is purely like two guys that are mad that they're not in Paris right now playing in that game to try and prove something and do something to help their club teams in the absence of that. So that's something to highlight, because I don't think Diego Luna was particularly great in the first game of this derby, and certainly he was an important player for all Real Salt Lake, but he certainly was not as pivotal as Chicho Arango and as Andres Gomez were, who were absolutely fantastic. Gomez very much being the Robin to Chicho Arango's Batman. And on that note, Mark, we have to ask where Batman is going to be, because Chicho Arango, we found out earlier this week, has been suspended by the MLS Disciplinary Committee for 4 games. That includes 3 MLS games, including Wednesday night, so tomorrow night, RSL's playing, and then they're playing the Rapids. He'll also miss the MLS All-Star game, and that is because, Mark, he violated the MLS anti-harassment policy, so he's been suspended for those 4 games. Mark, Chicho Arango has been fantastic. He has been leading the Golden Boot, basically, since Copa America, when Lionel Messi wasn't playing in MLS and then couldn't score goals in MLS. This is a guy, Mark, who I think we would have expected, you know, to be a finalist for MLS MVP, along line Messi, pending his injury situation, and certainly the 2 star players in Ohio, Cucho Hernandez and Luciano Acosta. Mark, this is a guy who has absolutely terrorized the Rapids for Real Salt Lake. He did it previously when he was with LAFC. This is a star player who is missing. This is a star player who makes it easier for other guys around him, to where even if you deal with Chicho Arango, you have to deal with Diego Luna, you have to deal with Andres Gomez, you have to deal with Matt Crooks. And Mark, because Chicho Arango has been so important, he has been starting all of these games, to where I don't even know exactly who Pablo Mastroeni replaces with him. The most common substitution has been Anderson Julio, but Mark, that is a similar, the way that we feel going from Rafael Navajo to Darren Yapi prior to 2 weeks ago, I think is how RSL fans probably feel about Chicho Arango, and then dropping down from there to Anderson Julio, who can create a lot of really good stuff, like picking off Mois Bombito on a back pass for a breakaway, and then shooting the ball straight at Zach Steffen. Mark, what do we see in Real Salt Lake? How good of an opportunity do the Rapids have, given RSL are missing their best player?
This is a tough game. I like your call about an ISO, the idea of Luna and Bassett just squaring off in a who's more snubbed. I think the fact that they more or less play opposite each other is theoretically, we'll see how it lines up, because usually the defensive midfielder will take on the attacking mid, and the attacking mid will have to face a defensive midfielder. But it'd be fun for both coaches to be like, hey, let's just have them man mark each other and throw elbows and kick each other in the shins. But I don't think they have any animosity towards each other since they both got snubbed. Why would they? Yeah. I don't know. I do think that RSL is going to go into this game with a lot of fire. Their history in this game is much better than ours. Overwhelmingly, RSL, since their joining the league, I think in 2008, have won most of the Rocky Mountain Cups, and it's going to be a few years till we even get to the point where we challenge them, which is super annoying because the Colorado Rapids have a longer history in the league, have more history in the league. I think the teams have an equal number of trophies, though, right? RSL won the whole thing, and or did they go to the final and then lose? I forget. It was like in
they went to the final and beat LA Galaxy.
Yeah, I thought so.
Or 2013. 2013, they lost to Sporting in penalties.
Sporting. Cool. Anyways, I don't have any real strong feelings about this game. I think a draw is a reasonable possibility here. I also really am concerned about both teams being spent after this midweek, and then, of course, trying to figure out going into League's Cup. So, plus, there's a few players. But your point about Chicho Arango is a really good one, that, like, without him, there's a very different team. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think without Justin Gladmark, you know, I think certainly this is a defense that is less well off. Let me just look up, because RSL's had a bit of a slide recently. Let me pull up the form guide here on MLSsoccer.com, because I know they've lost a few. Okay, so they beat Atlanta 5-2. That was the Diego Luno going off game. They beat Houston Dynamo as well at home 3-2, but then they lost recently to LA Galaxy. That was the game that I think it was Arango who got a head injury and had to be taken out and, like, got some staples. They won at Sporting Kansas City, but then they've drawn at Montreal. You know, they haven't played. There's a very compelling argument, Mark, that the Portland Timbers are the best team that RSL has played since the last time they played the Rapids. And I think the Colorado Rapids, fully fit and healthy, are a better team than the Portland Timbers. I think we should also point out most of the big wins that RSL have had of late have been home wins in which Chicho Arango is cooking. You know, you remember that 5-1 that they had against Atlanta, Mark, and Chicho Arango scored on Brad Stuver from midfield as well. And then the Houston game as well, he played really well. So RSL is still a very good team. They are on paper fully healthy, probably still a better team than the Colorado Rapids. But most of their success since the 5-3 win over the Rapids back on my birthday, May 18th. Mark, did you know that May 18th was my birthday and the Rapids played on that day? Most Yay. Of their success recently since then has been at home against bad teams where Chicho Arango is absolutely cooking. What are things that are not going to happen on Saturday, Mark? They are going to be away to a good team and they are not going to have Chicho Arango. So we'll see what happens. We'll have a data point, at least certainly tomorrow, when RSL plays. Who are RSL playing tomorrow? They are playing. Real Salt Lake are playing at LAFC. So, oh my God, that game's going to be a mess, Mark, given the red cards that LAFC had. So, you know, we'll see who plays up top or what the formation looks like from Paolo Mascherini. And so we'll see if that changes things or what that looks like without having Chicho Arango. Is it Anderson Julio? Is it Andres Gomez in a false nine position? Does Diego Luna move centrally? Do they not have a center forward? Is it more of a 4-3-3 or maybe a 4-4-2 rather than the 4-2-3-1 that Pablo Mascherini's been running, what, basically since 2014 with the Rapids, Mark? So we'll see what that looks like. I do think this is a defense that can be had given Justin Glad has been out. They've had some issues on set pieces as well. So I think if unless horrible things happen tomorrow, Mark, against the LA Galaxy from an injury standpoint or a squad rotation standpoint, I have to believe that Chris Armas is thinking about this game on Saturday, and there's going to be a lot of emotion and focus put into that. And look, if RSL is not firing on all cylinders, or if they're just an easier team to deal with attacking wise to where Andres Gomez, Sam Vines just has to worry about him 1v1. There's no threat up the middle because Matt Crooks is not as good at Chicho Arango. And that just makes it easier then for the double pivot of the Rapids to go a little bit more forward and not have the issue they've had previously where they get caught out defensively and leave space in for an attacking player. Chicho Arango will destroy you all day if you give him the opportunity that Lewis Morgan got on Saturday for New York Red Bulls. And so I don't have that same concern if Chicho Arango is not there necessarily. And I think this is a team defensively wise can be had. If Kevin Cabral and Cole Bassett play up to the way that they did against St. Louis in transition and in their pressing game, and if Rafael Navajo plays with the level of intensity that he was playing where he had that streak where he was scoring every single game as well, I have full faith that the Colorado Rapids can and will get a result on Saturday. Mark, let's come to predictions. Would you like me to go first?
Go ahead.
Rabbi, I can't. There was so much PTSD from seeing that game in person on Saturday. There just seems to be a level of inevitability and why not us? Like, I can't psychologically. I will not believe that the Colorado Rapids are capable of winning the Rocky Mountain Cup when the opportunity presents itself and it's made easy for them until they actually physically do it. You could tell me that Real Salt Lake has 12 guys on the injury list between now and Saturday and are having to call up a bunch of guys from Real Monarchs, and still all of my PTSD and everything will say that RSL will find a way to win that game and Colorado will find a way to make one mistake that blows the game anyways. And so for those reasons, I can't narrative-wise and emotionally and psychologically in all this history, I'm not willing to admit or accept or believe that this team will do it until I physically do it. And so for those reasons, I have a 1-0 absolute poophousery smash and grab RSL win. It'll be Andres Gomez.
Nice. I have the Rapids drawing 1-1 in this game, and just I guess I'll give the goal. Wow, Ali Raz had a nice shot in this last game. He only has one goal in the season. What if Darren Yapi scores in extra time to draw this game up, or in added time to draw this game up? Well, that sounds good to me.
It needs to be a win, Mark, in order to get the Rocky Mountain Cup.
Right. I didn't say anything about who gets the Rocky Mountain Cup. It's a draw. That's what I said.
Okay, so we're both predicting RSL to win the Rocky Mountain Cup then. Sorry, listeners.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, it's a trophy that means a lot when you're in the stadium. If you're not in the stadium for it, or if you are not at a bar in the preseason to hold the cup, it's not as big a deal. I think we need to get to the point where we've won it a few more times, and it's like fairly even, because right now it's been RSL's cup for a very long time. We need to be more focused as a team, and as a podcast on winning the league, you know, winning a trophy, winning MLS Cup at the end of the season, or winning Leagues Cup, which I would really like to do.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark, that in order for it to be a rivalry, it has to go back and forth. And when it's so one-sided, that doesn't necessarily help you. I can't remember what year this stat was or anything, but I remember there was a point at which Opta had it, that if you looked at RS in terms of matchups between MLS teams in the previous decade, the most one-sided matchup you had between all teams and all possible matchups in MLS was Colorado versus RSL, which just showed kind of how one-sided it was. And, you know, it's such a big deal, Mark, that, you know, Real Salt Lake, you know, FSL lives rent-free in the heads of every single Rapid sicko 365 days a year. And RSL comes out with a banner on decision day last year and says our rivalry deserves better. And, you know, they've got, you know, a TIFO of, you know, the Rapids logo over a dumpster fire. And so it's, you know, the Rocky Mountain Cup has lost its shine in the mind of RSL fans because it's just something that they win every single year. It's a foregone conclusion. That doesn't make it interesting. That doesn't make it exciting. It's the, okay, yeah, we're going to show up. We're going to have fun beating them. But, you know, Manchester City destroying Burnley 5-0 every single year when Burnley gets promoted, that doesn't make it a rivalry. It's fun to win and watch. It's not what you get up excited for. What makes the Manchester Derby interesting is the fact that it's gone back and forth and both teams overall have had some success. That's maybe a bad example. You know, we'll say, I don't know, Arsenal-Chelsea, Mark, is maybe a better example of a rivalry you'd want in terms of both teams having success in terms of winning trophies and having variability in terms of who's the better team, who's winning games head-to-head, and then who's finishing higher in the standings. And so when you've had in the seven-year history of this podcast, well, six, because the most recent one hasn't been determined, you know, RSL's winning 5-1 and the Colorado, you know, you've got the COVID year. And prior to that, you have to go back to 2015, in which the Rapids have won it. And even if we want to look overall, RSL has won this trophy 14 out of the 15 years that it has existed. And Colorado won the first 2 years of it when RSL was an expansion team and was bad. So give 3 years for RSL to get their bearings under them as an MLS expansion team. And right now, it's scoreboard's 15-3. That's not a rivalry. That's that's Arsenal versus Luton Town.
That's my point.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying.
So the competition has juice because both teams are really good. This is a major matchup in terms of what it means for playoff seedings. Both teams have really young, exciting players. Both teams have major international DPs who they've paid a lot of money for, who are going to be a part of this team. I'll include Andres Gomez since Chicho Arango isn't available. This was a game that was absolutely the best game of the weekend, the last time these two teams played, and was fantastic and had relevance within both fan bases and also relevance nationally because of how exciting the games were, how competitive the games were, and how good both of the teams were having good players on them. But you need to finish the sentence. You need to, if RSL wins this game, Mark, or just finds a way to get a result or whatever, and then the Rapids are one and done in the playoffs, then all of the people paying attention from a distant standpoint are as apologetic and empathetic as Andrew Wiebe is towards the Rapids. Hello, darkness, my old friend, and everything. It'll be, oh, same old Rapids. Like, to change the narrative, you need to do the impossible. And doing the impossible is doing a thing that this reporter does not think, refuses to accept, can happen until he physically sees it happen. So I look forward to Chris Armas and Cole Bassett proving me wrong on Saturday when the Rapids win 3-1 and play absolutely fantastically and take advantage of this opportunity that they've been given because Chicho Arango did something harassing and probably terrible in that game against Portland Timbers that, where I'm not going to speculate on what it was, but if you read the MLS Next Pro anti-harassment policy, it's something akin to what we've seen in the past. It would be Chicho Arango crossing the line in a way that is horrible and unbecoming and makes us think that he's not a good person. Mark, anything else on Rocky Mountain Cup, or shall we go to some Ask HTHLs?
Do we have any? Fantastic.
I think we have two. Okay. We've got a couple here. So first, I'll throw it to you, Rabbi, from Michael Bizarro's asking, who wins the West? Mark, so I guess I'll go, who finishes top of the MLS Western Conference of the regular season, and who represents the Western Conference at MLS Cup?
I think it's going to come down to LA Galaxy and LAFC down the stretch. Right now, those two teams are 1-3, and Galaxy are going to get hot. They're going to leapfrog them both and go up. The Rapids are going to fall a couple spots probably by the time we get to the playoffs, and the other team that's going to get hot eventually and move up the standings is Seattle. I don't think they're going to get into the... They might get into the top four, but I don't think they're going to go on and tear it up. They're a little on the old side, so I don't think that they're going to end up... I think we're going to have a really frustrating and disappointing year in terms of new narratives and exciting narratives, which means I think LAFC are ultimately going to top LA Galaxy down the stretch and make it to the final of MLS Cup on the Western side.
In the same spirit of that question, Mark, we will go to Daddy Shuttle, who asks, we are fourth in the Western Conference. We're fourth in the West with some tough games coming up while missing some key players. Can we realistically say top three, top four, or do we just make playoffs? Basically, is the other shoe going to drop? In short, Daddy, as Rabbi just said, I will agree with him. I think it will. I think the Rapids are out kicking their coverage right now. I think certainly they've done a fantastic job to be top four right now. I don't think there's any question, barring major injury or Steve Cherundolo going to the national team, LAFC, Real Salt Lake, and LA Galaxy are all better than them and will finish above the Rapids in the table. Portland's there. I'm kind of TBD on them, depending on what they do this summer in terms of, I think they've got an open DP slot. I do think Vancouver has underperformed what they are. If you had to pick who's the team most likely to jump the Rapids and finish top four, I will say it's Vancouver Whitecaps. They're sitting currently sixth right now. The Colorado Rapids are probably a sixth to eighth place team in the Western Conference. That being said, Mark, if we're looking at the Mark Bodmer line, I think it was 44-45 points that got you ninth place in the Western Conference last year. The Rapids are currently sitting on 38 points with 24 games left. So you're looking at, you know, 6-7 points punches their ticket to the playoffs probably. I think the Rapids are better than Minnesota. I do think they're better than Portland. Seattle, I think, are figuring it out, Mark. I'll agree with you there. I think they're better than Houston, and I think they're better than all of the teams that are currently below the playoff line as well. San Jose, they're done. St. Louis, they're going through a coaching change as well. Sporting Kansas City, you know, if the Rapids are able to win at Children's Mercy Park, that'll be done. They're better than Dallas. They're better than Austin. So if I had to amend my prediction right now, I will say that the Colorado Rapids finish sixth or seventh in the Western Conference. And I think that'll be fair in terms of just where they are and how well they've played. Ask HTHL, Mark, I'll have us both answer this. We just mentioned it briefly. Eric Stinson wants to know, how many points do we think the Rapids will finish with this season? As I mentioned earlier, Rapids sitting on 38 points with 10 games to play. Rabbi, how many are we finishing with?
How many, what are we finishing with?
Points.
Points. I hate this question because it's such a weird, you know, from season to season, how many points you need is really kind of like always a difficult question of like what the ultimate team point score needs to be. So you need like mid-40s to make the playoffs historically. Mm-hmm. The Rapids have 43 right now. Minnesota in ninth place is on 30 points. Ninth place is the last spot right now. So I think the Rapids are probably going to go like 1.3 the rest of the way with 10 games to go. That would give them 13 points. 56? Let's say 56.
Ooh, I think that's... the Rapids are on 38, Mark. I think you misread the table. So you got 51 what? Points, 52?
Oh, yeah. I was looking at LA Galaxy because that's the game that's being played. So, yeah, 51.
Okay, I think that's fair. I was going to say 50, Mark. Right now, so based on the club's current points per game average, which is I think is like 1.58. Yes, 1.58. If we were to extrapolate that out, listeners, to a 34-game season, the Rapids would get 53.72 points. Let's round that up to 54 points. I think the Rapids will slightly underperform that 50-51 mark. That's got to be good for 6th or 7th, right? I think that's probably fair. We take that, right, Mark? Like, we would have said 9th, you know, this time last year, if you told me that the Rapids were finishing 9th in the Western Conference in 2024, we would have said fantastic. So I'll take that. I'll take a home playoff game. Thank you very much.
I had the Rapids at the beginning of the season finishing 7th. I think with the way I just predicted it, I think we slide down to 6th, and I'm fine with that. I think, you know, it's good to go into the playoffs a little bit hot. It does not serve you to go into the playoffs and have that bye week. I think teams historically over the last couple of years who've had a bye in their first week, it's been hard, and you don't really like that. So I like the idea of going into the playoffs at 6th. I think it works for us.
I think we've covered everything, Rabbi. Shall we land this plane?
Let's go, dude.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, at @Rapids96podcast. You can email us at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions on social media. We're on mostly Twitter, X. We're also on Facebook. Like our Facebook page if you haven't already. You can send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and tell your politically anxious friend who's looking for an escape to think about something else about our podcast so that they can think about soccer instead of about the impending doom of the American democracy. Thank you so much for listening to Holding the High Line. Enjoy the game on Wednesday. Enjoy the Rocky Mountain Cup as well. Hopefully it's a good one. Be kind to each other. Try and create the world that you want to live in. And if you do that, you can be a force for good in the Rapids community and in society.
Peace.